Okay, well, what's today? Today is Wednesday, May 25th, I think, 2016.
May 25th, right.
And we're having a little visit this morning on the campus of the University of Dubuque with Mr. Dick Smith, who's now an adjunct professor?
No, I'm an associate professor.
Associate professor.
Full-time.
How many years have you been here?
Next year will be 13.
Really? And when did you retire from West Dubuque?
03.
Okay, 03. And you were at West Dubuque for?
The first year was 72. Fall of 72.
Farley.
Yeah, 72.
Okay. That gives us a little background. I want to go back a little farther in your history, if we could.
Okay.
When you were in, let's say, high school at St. Joe's.
St. Joe's.
What did you see for yourself? Go down the road at that point.
Well, I was going to be a priest, and it didn't take too long for me to realize that it wasn't going to work. Potential family was necessary, so I took 2.5 years to talk my way out of there because I didn't want to disappoint people, my mother especially, and then Father Vogel, who remained friends of mine till he died.
Yeah, I remember Father Vogel also.
So and then one day I knew that if I talked to him, he'd talk me into staying, so one morning I just got up and left. So I went to Father Kutch and said, I need a room, and he'd say, okay, we have one. Okay. Now we're still friends of Father Kutch.
Yes. So that was at Lawrence College?
Right.
And so then from that point, you eventually graduated from Lawrence, right?
Graduated from Lawrence. Then thought maybe I wanted to teach math. I wasn't sure. I was thinking about going into grad school. The Lawrence professors thought that I could do philosophy or physics or math and then come back there. But then Bill Sigworth from Holy Cross, a friend of mine, had a job interview at Wallert, and he couldn't get his car started. So I went out in shorts and grubbies, gave him a ride, and I was sitting in the office, and Father Guder hired him and then said, can you teach math? And I said, yeah. So he says, well, let's talk. And a couple weeks later, I decided to stay there, and I thought it was just going to be temporary, and ended up 3 years. Then I decided to do what I really wanted to do and go back to grad school, but I definitely missed students. It wasn't something I expected to have happened to me, but I really missed students.
So the grad school was at?
Iowa. So then I found out Western Dubuque had a job opening, and it was in middle school, but the morning I was supposed to have the interview, we had a baby, so I didn't really have an interview. But so then I thought, well, that's a sign that I should stay in school. But then Tom Wickham called and offered the job to me. And then John Ball was getting out of the service. So he had hired Jack Wolfe a day before me. And then when John Ball was coming back, they kind of decided they didn't need me. But so then a couple days later, they called and said, well, we're going to hire you anyway. So that's what happened. But my initial interest in Western Dubuque was when Wayne would go from farm to farm talking about this concept of Western Dubuque. And I remember I remember I must have been pretty young, probably 12, 13 years old.
Late 50s.
Because I was born in 46. And we just sat on the lawn, and Wayne talked about his vision for a public school. And I'm sure that if he talked to my father, he talked to everybody. So that was my first. And then when I was at St. Joe's, somebody said, I wonder what Western Dubuque will be like. And I went, what's that? And they said, oh, that's the new school in Epworth. So I really can remember not knowing what Western Dubuque was.
Yeah, those are early beginnings of the high school. Had just been completed and opened, I think, at that point.
Right.
And that building was built with the idea that it would probably maybe house 400 students at the most ever.
Right.
And so that idea went out the window about 6 or 7 years ago when there was 700 or more students.
Right.
And things reversed themselves with the close of the Catholic high schools and whatever. So anyway, where did you reside then when you got the job?
We moved to Dyersville. And probably we knew Mottie's. We knew Jim and Jean Mottie. So we thought, well, that would be good, and it'd be close, and then Joyce could, if she decided to work someday, she could. There was a hospital there. So she ended up working there 2 years later. But then I taught seventh grade at the middle school in a portable.
Yep, I remember.
And the recess was right outside. And it was, I thought, this is not what I signed up for. And then I had an interesting individual next to me who kept the door locked between my classroom and his classroom. And didn't have enough books, so we scrapped together just all kinds of different books. And I had students check out miscellaneous books overnight and would give individual assignments. Well, then later I realized that the reason that we didn't have books was because they were all locked in Peter Garland's closet, the books that I was supposed to have.
How'd you come to know that? I mean,
Through, I guess my first year I didn't ask enough questions, but through Dave Wegman probably and Tom Wickham, they said, you have books, but we didn't know where they were. But they were in his perfectly organized closet. And then I wanted to save the old books, so I put a Hanbury girl on a stool and I handed her books which we were going to store above the closet. I thought it was solid wood up there, but it was just drywall. So the books fell through the drywall. So it's a good thing she didn't get killed.
So that was 72, 73, was it? Or?
Yeah. 70, let's see, I was engaged in 70, married in 71. We had Chris in 70. So 72, 73, 74, I was at the junior high. And then 75, 76, 77, I was at the annex.
Okay.
Which was the building I actually went to high school at. So we had 3 years there, which was really great. The freshmen would be bused to us. First year students would be bused to us. And then they would take most of their classes in Epworth, but a lot of classes in the annex. Jane Deneve, Julie Norby, Dan Elgin was there part-time, Paul Knutson, Joe Copenhaver, Chuck Bailey, Jerry Schmidt. It was a good We had fun.
Was Brian there then?
Brian Heideck was my principal there. And then Paul Knudsen was a principal there.
I just visited Brian and Sally in March at their place in West Palm Beach.
Yeah, and it was so sad when he left.
Yeah.
At the middle school, Sally was over there in teaching elementary when I was. And this is funny. One day there was a bunch of candy on the table in the teacher's lounge. And she was looking at the candy, and most of it was like covered chocolates and stuff. And she says, "I wish I could find something hard to suck on." So a bunch of people stood up by the chair, by the table, and to this day she probably doesn't know what she said. But,
well, actually, they'll be at our house in a couple of weeks. I'm going to ask her about that.
And then I interviewed for a job at the high school. And Sally told me I had the job before I was notified. So that was interesting.
So that was 76, 7, somewhere there?
75, 76.
Okay. So were you, when you went to the high school, were you still in a portable? Or?
I was in a portable for a long time. I was in a portable till the addition was put on, which included the South Science Rooms and the new band room and the... I don't know what year that was, but I was in a portable a long time. There was Dave Corbin was next door, and Linda Olson was two away. And then there was a big puddle in front of our portables, which the students just walked around, and we used to call it Lake Olson. And then one day, my portable got hit by a truck. It was the first one, and a truck actually backed into the portable, smashed the gutter. So then I thought I'd report it, so I tried to use the intercom to get to the office. Well, the cord had been severed, so we had lost communication with the office because I was going to report the incident.
Collision.
And then one day the door blew off. It was so cold. But the students who had, in bad weather, they'd bring plastic with them, sheets of plastic, and they'd lay it down on the floor because the floors were just always dirty as the day went on. They were clean in the morning, but students learned to survive.
It was kind of a culture that developed in the among the students and the faculty that had to put up with what you're talking about.
During cold weather, there'd be such temperature variation because when the students were coming in the class, the temperature would just plummet during cold days. So then, when they all got seated, the temperature would rise, and then when they'd leave, the temperature would go way down again. So we lost a lot of energy. And that the same thing is true for the building. The boilers would run an awful lot in the main building during that transition from one class to the other. And then one day we had a class rained out. It was raining so hard the students couldn't move. So a class period was canceled because of rain.
Okay.
Which
must have been before I was there.
Oh no, it was in the middle of my portable days.
Okay.
But we just
same place.
It was just announced. Keep your students. And one day I tried to, I hated the color scheme, so one day I went over and I painted the whole thing white and then took an overhead projector with cartoon characters. And I had Snoopy, and I put it on the, flashed it on the wall, and then used red and black paint to try to make the students enjoy being there a little bit more than they were and did enjoy it. And then I figured I have a right to look at something nice too. But there was in that portable, there was a weak spot. I got underneath it and saw that there was dry rot. So when I seated students, I tried to put little kids little kids by that place, because I figured, you know, you put Byron Heights and Joe Gatto there and you're going to have an accident.
Isn't that something that...
And the pitching machine was always stored in my portable. When the baseball and softball season started. So, and what impressed me is the staff. We just made it work.
Tolerate all of the inconveniences.
We just made it work. And then Carl Hying had an air-conditioned portable. And in the fall, when school had started, it would be really hot sometimes. So, just to make the rest of us feel bad, he would wear a coat. He'd wear a coat out to his portable. When the rest of us were, we should have been in shorts and tank tops.
Well, that was, yeah, those years were, you know, but as I were looking back, what we had with the group of staff that we had was, kids are so privileged to have you guys as far as teachers. I
mean. We just, we had the same mission. The mission was to take the students where they were and take them to where they wanted to be.
Yeah,
and everyone was served. Students who struggled got lots of help. And students who were capable of doing really good work were challenged. So I think this, I was so privileged to work with people who really, really got to know the kids as individuals. We knew where they were from. We knew their siblings. We treated them as not as equals, but as friends. And that those friendships have endured. The students, I think, knew they were being treated well.
Yeah.
And now, Tom Danner is probably the, Carl Altus are the only two there that worked with me.
Yeah.
So the change was.
I talked, ran into Tom the day before yesterday. He was out walking. He just had his hip replaced.
Yeah, good.
And he's doing really good. Anyway, he said one more year, and that's going to be.
Yeah. And during the last 5 years of my career, I was in Epworth and Cascade every other day.
Okay, I didn't know that.
I did the TAG program for 5 years, and I was there every other day. And that was interesting because both Epworth and Cascade were definitely different.
So back.
And I realized that the difference was their strength. They were to try to make them both the same would have been a mistake indeed. So my point is that culture of instruction and care for students develops, and it develops on its own, and it can develop in different ways, but once that strength and culture and character of an institution exists, it's really not smart to mess with it. And from what I can tell, shortly after my retirement, that culture was messed with. And I would meet individuals who were very disillusioned. A veteran staff was encouraged to make changes that they knew in their souls was not right. So administrators need to follow their teachers and tweak the problems, not make major changes.
Not mess with the heart and soul of the institution.
It's really takes time to develop a quality institution, and it doesn't take long to destroy it.
That's not the truth. Yeah.
It's kind of like a plant. You plant a little seed, and eventually that plant gets really, really strong. And then if you decide to prune that plant, you can kill it.
Right.
And then you have to rebuild, and that takes a lot of years. But we would play tricks on each other all the time. That was send notes to each other. We never let our work interfere with our fun.
Enjoyment.
Yeah. Chuck Bailey would sit on top of the pop machine in the morning. You know, that was unusual.
Was that the annex?
I can remember him doing that at Epworth. He'd be sitting on top of the pop machine. You know, that was just... But it was... People were allowed to be who they were.
Were you in on the thing they did to Bailey at the annex?
With Leo Kennedy.
Or the sheriff.
The sheriff was talking to a class, and we all knew the sheriff. And we wanted to play a trick on Chuck Bailey. So we asked the sheriff to come in and tell Chuck that it had been reported that he had done something inappropriate in a driver ed car. And Chuck didn't realize that the sheriff had been in school for other reasons. I mean, that was pretty immature of us. One day they put me, they took me to the ground, tied my feet to the top drawer of my file cabinet by my shoestrings, and my students walked in.
Well, no, it's fine.
Because they had been down at Epworth eating.
Okay.
So they walked in, and there I was. I had to be untied by my students so I could teach.
Okay. Well, so what did you guys do with the annex for your lunch period? I mean,
we brought our own lunch.
Oh, you did? Okay.
And we ate in my classroom.
Okay. Which classroom did you have?
I had the one that was closest to the office on the north side of the building. The classroom that was closest to the gymnasium.
Okay. Was that the old typing one?
It was the old, I learned to type in that room.
Yeah, that was Sister Palmore's room.
Right. Then I can remember when Ralph Buckman retired, we thought, what are we going to do? You know, because he was the definition of Western Dubuque for so long, he and Wayne. And the day that I first saw Harold, I was in that typing room, my classroom, and I saw him walk by being given a tour of the facility. So that was the first time I saw Harold Knutson.
Okay. Yeah, that was a that was a transition year when Harold and I came to the high school, and I remember that we were tested by the students.
Yeah.
That year, but it seemed like.
Well, it worked.
Once that transition was over with, why?
Yeah, I don't remember it. Once it started, the faculty members just settled in, and I don't think we ever worried about it. I think the confidence in you two was strong from day one, you and Harold.
Yeah, that was that was some good years in the 80s, but I remember, trying to help get some of those bond issues passed. Oh. The frustration. Worked hard at it, and every time we'd get shot down by the west end of the district, it was just,
Well, one day someone stopped at my house campaigning against the bond issue, and they didn't know me. So I thought, oh, this will be fun. So he was telling all kinds of stuff about how terrible Western Dubuque was, and I just let him talk. And he had a whole litany of lies. So then finally he said, well, what do you do? I said, I teach at Western Dubuque High School. And then I could remember what he had said, and I said, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's a lie, that's a lie. You're just going door to door, lying about.
What were some of the things he was?
Oh, that the students weren't capable. That parents were sending their kids to Western Dubuque because they were embarrassed by them. And I said, well, then why do we win the Platteville math contest pretty often? We had 4 perfect ACT scores 1 year from our football players. We have students who do really, really well in grad school in their careers, and I said, my own kids can't even make the math team. And he just, his whole philosophy was, we need to paint a picture of that place being inferior academically. Otherwise, why would you attend a parochial school if it wasn't?
Yeah.
The parochial school had to be superior to the public school. But he was pretty shocked when he found out who I was. And he's someone who moved to Dyersville, but he had Cascade roots, so he really didn't know me personally. He was just going door to door. And I said, you're going door to door lying. So I said, is this going to be your last stop? And he admitted it wasn't. So when it takes lies to stop something, that's just wrong.
Do you think he was part of a committee or?
Well, there was, Joyce and I went walking one day, and we lived in Dyersville, and we both had to go to the bathroom. So we went to the bathroom in the basement of the Basilica, and all of a sudden we heard talking, and there was a group that was meeting, and they were just strategizing about how to defeat this bond issue. And the message, we didn't walk in disrupted. But our realization was the truth was not something that was necessary. They just had some bullet points they were going to push, and whatever the public would believe to be true was their truth, not the real truth.
Yeah.
And what was interesting is a lot of them were Delaware County people. They were people who their kids attended Beckman. They were Western Dubuque taxpayers, but they lived west of, some of our big opposition was west of Dyersville.
Fort Petersburg.
I won't mention names, but... But then I think what really helped Western Dubuque was the emergence of Piazza. When the Piazza parents who were pro-education period, you know, they wanted good things for their children, became allies of the public school system. That really, really helped.
Well, if you're a parent with an emerging family, young kids, I mean, Piazza has basically everything that you need to raise a family.
Right.
It's amazing.
When my son Marty was a freshman, he still had friends that he went to elementary school with in Dyersville. And he was talking on the phone with one of his Beckman friends. And finally, the Beckman friend said, "Well, I have to do my algebra." And Marty said, "Well, maybe my dad could talk to you about it." And the kid said, "Well, it's pretty hard." And I thought to myself, that student really believes that teachers at Western Dubuque would not be able to help him. And Marty says, "I'm going to get my dad." So they were using the same Dolciani textbook that we were. So without, he says, I'm working on a problem, page 66, problem 8. Do you have a book? And I said, "No, I know what it is." I had taught that book so long. And we would tape books together. We liked this math book so well. We would tape it together. Every summer I would get strapping tape and I would fix books. And one time I remember passing out a book to a student and she says, "My mom had this book."
Well,
so because we liked that series so much, we kept it.
Yeah.
And we saved money.
Yeah.
And students didn't expect to have good stuff. You know, people would I'd say, "Okay, now we're on page 38. The students raise their hand. "I don't have a page 38. But they made it work.
I was in Elmhurst last week. Jill has an 11-year-old and a 9-year-old. Anyway, the girl is going into middle school next year, but they had a program at their grade school where she goes. And so we were there, it was kind of a talent show type thing. Anyway, so we went over. I'd never been in the building, and I walked in, and they had an auditorium. I mean,
yeah,
grade school, a nice one. Well, we never had anything like that.
Darlene Rush and I were in charge of the National Honor Society, and I can remember, you know, after we'd have to wait until really late in the evening to set up the chairs to get it, to switch it from being an athletic practice facility to a...
How about the parent-teacher conferences?
Yeah, in the gym with the privacy, the noise... muffled the things you were hearing, and there'd be two teachers at a table.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So probably we were breaking some privacy laws.
That's for sure.
But, and one thing about you administrators is you trusted your teachers. You didn't tweak us. You just let us do it the way we thought it should be done. And Mike Horsfield wrote a senior paper one year comparing his four math teachers. He did a comparison and contrast and said the strength of of the departments. You know, you pick the math department, but I think this would be true for virtually every department, was it's the diversity of the way we delivered math. You know, freshman year, you learned it one way. Sophomore year, you learned it in a similar way, but not quite. And over a period of time, you matured because you saw the whole discipline from different perspectives. Whereas if we had all tried to be clones of each other, we would have succeeded with some students, but not all.
Do like a simulated check-in? Like, say you have a character who went through an orgy.
And then I remember one time Billy Betts
sent that to the class first and say,
put a tape recorder in Tom Wickham's file cabinet.
How could they get over it? And then
he screamed, "Help!" And it sounded like it was coming from outside. It was in the spring.
And
then he fast forwarded it, screamed, "Help!" And then this went on for like an hour. And finally, the last incident was, the last thing he taped was, "Help, I'm being held captive in this file cabinet." So Wick opened the file cabinet and realized he had been listening to a tape recording.
Oh my God.
And then KDTH had a program called Sound Off.
Yeah.
And Betts would let the kids listen to Sound Off during his study hall. So one day he dubbed in a call from a lady in Epworth, Iowa. And they were complaining about John Wickham. He says, "My paper boy, John Wickham, he never gets the paper to my front door. It's always laying on the lawn behind our bushes." And John Wickham thought that he was being complained about on Sound Off.
I think I have John in my Facebook. I'm going to have to...
I think it was John. It was one of the Wickham boys, for sure.
It was probably John.
But there was always at least one person on each staff that would keep things stirred up. And, you know, there were a few people who were pretty serious, but
yeah.
They allowed us to be... Faculty members allowed each other to be themselves. You know, you don't do it the way I do it, but that's okay. And then when I became a parent at Western Dubuque, then I realized how very, very good the teachers I worked with were. Because when I saw them teach before I was a parent, but then when my students would tell me in the evening what they had done in class, I thought, this is good stuff.
Yeah. Quality people.
Quality people. And I think Wayne Drexler, he had a vision of what type of people he wanted to hire.
Yeah. Yeah, he Dave Wegman and I did two sessions with him, and he always said that money was never a issue with as far as who he hired.
Right.
It was the best person he thought would fill the bill.
And I got hired by mistake because I wasn't needed. They thought they needed me, but they didn't. But he said, "Well, we can find something for you to do until we have a resignation." And it took 3 years before I got in a position where I think they wanted me.
Yeah.
And he used the middle school, I think, as a way to, if he found an elementary teacher that he really liked, but he didn't need that person yet, found out they could teach middle school, he would put them there. And the same with high school, because if you look at the 7th and 8th grade staff during the 70s and 80s especially, it was always a staff in transition. People were moving in and out of there like Karen Adams taught math in 7th and 8th grade, with a master's degree from Stanford.
Yeah.
Because Wayne knew someday I want her teaching in our high school program.
Yeah.
So he stuck her there. Jim Demmer was there.
Yep.
There was an awful lot of people there. Then we were reunited years later at in the position we were fit the best.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I still keep in contact with former students who are doing great things. Like Larry Weber is probably one of the best civil engineers in the world. He's the head of the hydrology department at the University of Iowa. And people come to study with him from all over the world.
Wow.
So he's an expert in water movement. And he grew up in Dyersville where there was not much water movement. So he's like in charge of the salmon fishery problems in the Northwest. You know, anytime anything moves, Larry Weber understands it. So he's an expert at building dams that are fish friendly, hydroelectric friendly, and he's really, really good. Hans Johnson, who failed second grade, is one of the world's experts in flow through the of fluids through the brain.
Where's he at?
He's at the University of Iowa.
Okay.
And they work together. So there, Larry is working with massive flows of liquid in dams and through dams and rivers. And Hans is dealing with flow of fluid in the brain. But it's the same mathematics.
Yeah.
And, you know, John Sigworth, who is deceased, was one of the nation's greatest people when it dealt with filming space flight, and the expert at the effects that the aurora borealis has on the Earth's power grid. And what was a real tribute to him is after he died, they put one of his objects was put on the spacecraft, and it was named after his mom.
Is that right?
So that was a big loss. He was a brilliant, brilliant guy. And I could identify with, and I think it was a blessing for me to be raised in that community, because I could understand what happened to those kids when they went home. I was one of them. And one treasure I will always have is students who weren't considered to be the upscale families in the district. The really poor kids who, you know, I knew who they were, and I found out later that some of those parents would say, you know, if you ever need anything, go to Dick Smith because he understands our family.
Okay.
Because, and then the real tribute they would give me was, he's a lot like his dad. And that's Dad Tom Bell from Farley, who was a handicapped adult.
Yeah.
We're really good friends. Dad would always stop at Simon Feed Store to talk to Tom Bell.
Yeah.
And Tom Bell could sense that my dad really respected him. And at his funeral, I still remember Tom went right ahead of everybody at the wake in line and put his hand on my dad's body and put a pair of gloves in the casket.
Wow.
Because they could remember shoveling corn together. So whenever I would deal with students, I would think to myself, how would my dad handle this situation? What would he do? What would he do to help a kid? And one time, one of my former students lost a child, and he had become physically disabled. The dad had become physically disabled. And I went to the wake, and he said to me, you know, when I was a kid, you lifted me up. You made me believe that I could do things that I never thought I could do. And now I can't stand up. So he said, I want you to lift me up right now. And I thought, that's why I did this.
Yeah.
And then there was a... I think my room in the morning was a safe place. People who were afraid to roam the halls. I don't think they were bullied. They were mostly just ignored.
Now some of that went on, for sure.
They would hang out in my classroom, and some of them for years. And one day, a student came in and said, why do those losers come to your classroom? And I said, they're not losers, they're my friends. And then one of them, who never had much success athletically, got to the state wrestling tournament. And he stopped before he left and he said, I'm going to think about you as I wrestle. And then one of them lost their mom. And I went to the wake. And he said, I knew you'd be here. And it was a really small wake, which is unusual in Dyersville, Iowa, to have a really small wake. And then he hand-delivered the thank you note to me. So the whole thing was about one-on-one relationships with pretty special human beings.
Right.
And teachers who don't open themselves up to that are missing what this is all about, I think.
Yeah.
But what was cool was when we were having those feelings, there was always somebody you could talk to. You know, Jerry Schmidt.
Yeah. What an eloquent guy.
We lifted each other up during times when we knew we needed a little boost ourselves. We were definitely brothers and sisters. And when Westy would get staff reduced every year,
God.
She never got a contract until summer.
That is so bad.
So he started giving her gifts every year. So I can remember it got to be so regular that she would get a gift that we decided that we would should have started her with a set of dishes or something. And then Jerry Schmidt would have those Friday morning payday things. Where he would do a top 10 list.
And,
those were things that...
That was pretty special, wasn't it?
Those were things... We were deprived of materials and facilities, but we had each other.
Spirit was always there.
We had each other.
You talk about Westy. Tom O'Brien, remember Tom O'Brien?
Yes, very well.
Tom O'Brien was a brilliant teacher.
Yes.
And he was at Cottingham. He's been at Cottingham.
Yeah, there. Right.
He contacted me a couple years ago, and he asked me to give him a recommendation because he says, I'd really like to get back into teaching.
Oh.
He says, that's from my heart.
Yeah.
My heart still is there. I don't know if he's actually acted on that or not.
But, okay.
I always felt so terrible to think that he got this kind of a situation where he was such a great teacher and couldn't get into a spot where he could stay, you know.
Yeah.
But
when shared time was dropped, we had painful transitions. We lost the canons. We lost some really good teachers through that procedure.
Yeah.
So that was a painful experience for staffing.
Yeah, that was definitely.
I don't know, one day I just decided to retire thinking that we had, Joyce and I had worked with Troubled Marriage Ministry and the Catholic Charities had offered us a contract to do that full time. And then the next day a priest got busted for inappropriate behavior and the diocese made a decision that there would be no new hires. So after my resignation letter, I wanted to rescind it, but trusted that I could do something else. And I landed here at University of Dubuque, and this place is a lot like Western Dubuque.
Really? Okay.
We, the same type of faculty, we're on the way up. Just like at Western Dubuque, you know, our scores were so bad at the beginning. And then all of a sudden we were doing really well.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing here. And, you know, I'm going to be 70. And this second retirement will be permanent.
Okay.
And it's going to be tough because when I walk into a classroom of students, I really pay attention to those who are hiding on me. The ones who are really friendly, I know I don't have to worry about them because they're going to pay attention to me and I'm going to pay attention to them whether I want to or not. But I think the trick in this teaching business is to figure out how to interface with students who don't know why they're there, don't know why they're alive, have never found their strengths, just don't know quite where they fit into life. And I think we as significant adults in their life can definitely push them in a direction that's good for them.
Yeah.
And to me, math is just the vehicle I use to get that done. And it's been a great life. My kids say, Dad, you could have made a whole lot more money. We could have had nicer bikes. We could have had more bathrooms so when our friends were at the house, they didn't have to stand in line all the time. But I think they understand why we did what we did.
Yeah. Yep.
And my daughter's a teacher.
Where's she at?
She's at Borlaug Elementary in Coralville and has chosen to spend her whole career in special needs.
Okay.
Because she says those kids need advocates. It might be easier to do a regular classroom, but she's choosing to deal with the kids who need special help.
So what about Chris and Marty? Are they?
Chris is still a physical therapist in the Twin Cities.
Okay.
Their son is a sophomore. He's has no cartilage at his knees. He's 6'6" and was a really good athlete, but can't compete at all.
That's too bad.
So now he's in the math team and the debate team. He's going to go to medical school. He's taken the PSAT score already and is qualified with national merit. So he's being recruited by Big Ten universities. Then they have 11-year-old daughter that's 12-year-old. She swims. They're really tall kids. And then Marty's in West Des Moines, and his kids are really little.
Are they?
But Johnny's 6 years old, and he can hit a baseball really well because they have batting cages in their basement. And so they play baseball 24/7, 12 months a year. And then Jenny has two boys that are 6 and 8.
Okay.
And they're big kids. So I have four grandchildren that are very large and two grandchildren that are very little.
Okay.
And the ones that are very little, our sturdiest boy had those kids, but he married a small little girl. So that's fun, too.
Well, yeah, that's... I mean, we just came off a stretch of being in Florida. Becky's in Jacksonville Beach. She runs a hotel, and she just had a little boy that's 6 months old. She just bought a house. So she wanted help painting, so we went down there for a week. And Susie just retired last fall, so we can do that now.
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
That was good. Then last week we were in Elmhurst for Jill. She had a garage sale, and we went in for that. Susie helped her organize that stuff, and she's got two kids. And so
yeah.
And our other, Kelly's in Marion, and two girls, and Caitlin graduated from Linmar, and Aubrey's a junior. Caitlin's in Central College in Pella.
Oh.
And finishing her sophomore year, and she's going to leave August 27th for London for a semester. In,
oh, wow, that's great.
In England.
Yeah, London's great.
So, time moves on.
But 49% of our students here are white.